Welcome to the Profitable Steward Podcast with Jared Sorensen. In this series, we'll learn and explore regenerative agriculture principles. Through practices that improve soil health, animal health, and good stewardship, we are working to help you increase your productivity and profitability. Join us in learning from successful farm and ranch experts who share stories of growth from their fields to help your fields grow strong. Here is your host, Jared Sorensen.
Welcome, everyone, to the Profitable Steward Podcast, the Profitable Regeneration Webinar Series. This is a special one here today. We are not broadcasting live with an audience. We decided that we're going to gather together, just kind of a fireside chat, you know, as if we were around the bunkhouse in the evening, and we're going to visit about some things that might be a little bit vulnerable. And so we encourage you, as you listen, to listen with an open heart and an open mind, and we hope that this recording will reach far and wide. Right now in agriculture, we're dealing with a lot of stressors. There's a lot of challenges. Record high commodity prices, and yet still foreclosures are happening. Money is often a stressor, but it's not the root. There are other things that are deeper. We're going to talk about some of those deeper things here. And we're gathered together here as a group of men, and we do not exclude women from this conversation, but it maybe made it a little bit safer if it's just a bunch of men talking. Certainly, we could have involved some, and maybe we will in the future. But as we visit here today, I'm going to give a brief introduction and allow these gentlemen that are here with me to introduce themselves. So today, we're here with Dave Voth, Jared Collister, and Dwayne Coombs. They're all men that I know, like, trust, great individuals, high integrity individuals, and it's an honor to be here with them. So let's start with you, Dave. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, where you're at, and what you do.
Yeah. Thanks for putting this together, Jared. I think this is a really important topic. My name is David Voth. Everybody calls me Dave. We're a small cow-calf producer, but to be honest, the majority of our income comes from consulting. I run a business consulting on ecological issues and ranch financial issues. We're based out of Elko, which is where my wife is from. My wife's a school teacher here in town, and we have an 11-year-old daughter who's just my end-all be-all. This topic is pretty near and dear to my heart, this mental health and agriculture, and I'm just so glad somebody's talking about it. I wish it wasn't me, but I'm glad somebody's talking about it.
Yep. Glad to have you, Dave. Jared Collister.
Yeah, I'm Jared Collister. I live and work at the Isle Ranch in Tuscarora, Nevada. I'm the assistant manager here. I have a family, a wife, and two kids, a boy and a girl. My family actually lives in Eureka. My wife works at the school in Eureka. And then we kind of swap weekends to see each other. I have struggled tremendously with addiction and a lot of mental health issues that I feel like I'm finally getting a grasp on. So I was grateful to have a chance to talk about it and hopefully help someone be relatable and help them get through whatever they might be facing.
Perfect, Jared. Yeah, great to have you. Appreciate your vulnerability. Dwayne Coombs.
Thank you, Jared. I'm Dwayne Coombs. I've known Jared since the college days, back at Utah State. So it's been a long time. Jared's been a great friend. Dave's been a good friend for a long time, for a number of years. Jared, I good to meet you virtually. Someday we'll get together. My story is I grew up the son of a cowboy. My family's the home ranch. The family, it was one of those sad tales where the brothers and sisters decided to sue one another over it, and so nobody ended up with anything. So as a young guy, my dad just pulled out, and he cowboyed around, moved around. Heather and I had met my wife Heather in college, married my college sweetheart, and found ourselves in Nevada managing a ranch in central Nevada. We were at Smith Creek Ranch for almost 20 years. did a short stint at the IL Ranch in northern Nevada, and then since have feel very blessed. I came to Nevada basically with a half wore out saddle and a dirty bedroll, and right now it's a privilege to be able to make a living off our own cows. We lease Big Springs Ranch from Nevada Gold Mines. I have two partners in that venture, two fantastic partners with me, Sean Gimmer and Dustin Fighter, also our partners in this venture here. But this has been a struggle. My awareness of this sort of thing, so that's kind of my story. So I'll just stop there, and then we can get into the rest of it later. But we just, I think the three of us are just cowboys, just normal guys that go to work every day, love our family. I do have one daughter that's at University of Montana Western in Dillon, and so and that's one of the struggles that I have is I don't know, seeing, we want our kids to follow us, but Desi is I don't know that she's interested in going into ag. I think she says, "Dad, I don't know that I want to do that. I don't know that I want to put up with that." And that's concerning to me. And so maybe I and so then you start looking back at what did I do wrong, or what should I have done differently so that to in, make this, because this is a great way to make a living. It's a great life. You have a cat that jumps on the computer the whole nine yards. So that, anyway, carry on.
Perfect, Dwayne. Blessed to have you here with us. So as we visit here today, we're just going to kind of keep this conversational, and our purpose in this is to be able to talk about some of these things that maybe we don't talk about in agriculture, and especially as men, about mental health issues, about addictions, about the struggles that we face. As men, especially, we carry the burden of being providers. The burden, I say burden, it's a responsibility and it's a privilege of being providers for our family. And that burden has been felt heavily by me, as well as the legacy of being a third generation rancher here on the operation that my grandparents put together, my parents added to, and I was blessed to inherit. And there came a time when I thought it was going to die on my watch. My net worth was so connected to my self worth was so connected to my net worth that as my net worth decreased, I felt that I had no self worth. And there was a point when it looked like suicide was not only a viable option, it was a responsible option. And I didn't necessarily have a plan or write the suicide letter or anything, but the thought crossed my mind multiple times that if I was no longer in the picture, that my wife could collect on the cash value of our life insurance policy, or upon the death benefit of our life insurance policy, and pay off our debts, and things would be better off. So that was a low point for me. And I did have individuals who reached out, multiple individuals independently, who reached out and they said, "Hey, Jared, do you think that you might be dealing with depression?" I had seen depression in my wife from our early marriage clear through. I had seen it in her, but I didn't see it in myself. And it took cutting against a wall and having somebody else help me to see that, holy cow, this is what's going on. For me, it was more situational, although I do have the genetic disposition for depression, probably on both sides of my parental line. But the situation, the stress is what brought it on for me. And so, we talk about that statistic for what it's worth. A statistic is only a number until you're the statistic or you know someone who is. And we don't want that to be you. So we're going to talk about it here. We're going to talk about it here. So Dave, tell us a little bit about your journey and kind of what you've been through, what's gotten you to this point to be vulnerable and be on this podcast.
So I'll just jump right into some vulnerable stuff. I definitely struggle with depression and have, looking back from an early age, I didn't know if that's what it was. I dealt with it in some, I'm sure I found some good coping for it and some definitely not. And maybe some good things might have come of it too, that drive to do better so that I wouldn't feel depressed. There's probably some good things that came from it. Overall, I don't suggest it. But one of the things you said that really struck with me when you're talking about your self-worth tied to your net worth, I know for me and for a lot of other people in agriculture, your self, everything about yourself is tied to your job. You know, you are a cowboy for the IL ranch, or you are an owner of 500 head of cows. And when those things don't go right, it takes a toll on you personally. It's a mark against you, you know, that you feel, and it's crushing. And I think it's good that we're that passionate about what we do, but it can't be the only thing that defines us. And for forever, agriculture was the only thing that defined me. And to be honest, it wasn't being a good husband. It wasn't being a good son until my daughter was born. That was really the first time that something outside of agriculture really got my attention. And I'm not bragging about this. It's not a good way to live, you know, where 100% of my focus was on somebody else's cows, or, you know, just expanding my own experience there. I will add on to that. At one point I took a job outside of production agriculture thinking I needed a break from agriculture. I joked that ranching was like a bad girlfriend that I needed to get away from for a while. And I took a job in town, and that's probably the lowest I'd been. I felt depression just really sunk in, and I struggled with it. And I finally struggled so deep that my wife called me out on it finally, and we'd been married for 15 years, and it was the first time she felt like she better say something. And it got me to go to the doctor and describe, you know, it wasn't suicidal, and I'm not knocking anybody that has those thoughts or feelings. That wasn't my deal, but I got on a prescription for an antidepressant, and it's probably something I'm going to take forever. It's it took like 2 weeks to kick in. And I remember, like, this is how you people feel all the time. This is like the world is okay, and not everything's on your own shoulders. And I couldn't believe the feeling that gave me that, and man, people walk around like that all the time. That's got to be great. It didn't solve everything for me, but it sent me in the right direction to start thinking about my mental health and doing something about it. And it's been that was probably 7 years ago. And I've definitely had some downs since then that I'm sure we'll get into. But that was kind of the first realization that this is a bigger problem than just being a little moody or a little cranky.
Yeah. And it's a good observation. Sometimes we don't realize how bad it is until we get that perspective and change, and then we can reflect back. And so appreciate that. Jared, tell us a little bit about your journey and why you volunteered for this.
Yeah. So I, it runs in my family, mental health issues. I have been diagnosed bipolar, PTSD. I know mental health issues really well. I also, drugs and alcohol, since I've struggled with them since I was 12 years old. It's been a big part of my life. I'm learning now that a lot of the mental health, taking care of it healthily, when I haven't done that, which I haven't most of my life, I deal with it with drugs or alcohol. So that's been a huge battle that I've learned a lot about over the years. I've had long bouts of sobriety in my life and like been on antidepressants and healthy, but until I really like realized I had a big problem I had to fix, I kept going back. I kept relapsing. And so, right now I've been sober for a really long bout, and I'm the most confident. I've become very active in Alcoholics Anonymous. The 12 steps has worked a lot for me. But I think the biggest thing that helped is I finally realized, like, I can't live this way anymore. And, like, suicide was a very close as you can get. And I got tired of it. And so I really relied on God and Alcoholics Anonymous, and it really helped me face why, like, whether I have mental health issues or not, it's possible to deal with them. And whether that's with antidepressants, with therapy, but putting a focus on it and really wanting to work through it, I begin to find like how to live healthy and how to cope with life in healthy ways instead of using substances to dull all that pain and the issues that I didn't know how to handle. I'm finally learning how to handle them. And it's been great. My life has been 100% better since I started focusing on that. And yeah, that's all I got.
That's perfect. Thanks, Jared. Dwayne.
So I think this journey, I have led the life of Riley. My life has been so blessed. You know, I grew up, I've got a wonderful family. My folks are very stable. My dad was a World War II veteran who it took him 20 or 30 years to be able to come home from that war before he was able to get married and move on with his life. And I see now, looking back, now that dad is gone, I see the effects that struggle had on him. He was in the South Pacific. He was on Okinawa and saw a lot of blood and a lot of nasty things. So I kind of grew up around with that. Almost there was a cloud around my dad. I think if we're not careful, we take those on. But in general, I mean, my gosh, I've lived horseback all my life. Married a beautiful, beautiful woman, have a beautiful family. In 2009, I was, and just stubborn as hell. You know, that's the Coombs trait. In 2009, I started branding calves, and I couldn't find help that I liked or that I wanted. And so I was doing branding these calves by myself. And so I would get a little bunch of cows, and I'd just tie calves down and rope five and tie them down and brand them and move on. About halfway through this process, I got where I couldn't hardly walk. I couldn't get back on my horse. I just having a heck of a time. And this went on, and I think the Lord works in mysterious ways, but ultimately I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2009. And that really was a gut punch. So I was at that time, I would have been 39 years old. I had the tiger by the tail, you know, the whole thing. I was pretty badass, especially if you ask me. Riding Broncos and roping wild stuff and just doing the thing, and all of a sudden you can't do it. So I had a very wise doctor that I think tricked me into like Dave. Since 2009, I've been on some, I take some an antidepressant every day. I think she initially tricked me into, she told me that it was for fatigue, but I think she could see something the heck was going on. But so that going on that way, you know, and then you go on with your life. What really started open my eyes to this struggle, and so I've always had compassion for folks, and you know, we all have struggles. Life is hard. But a year ago, and I was just thinking about this today because I just came. I spent this last week. I was in Washington D.C. with Public Lands Council, and a year ago, the day after I came home from D.C. with for the Public Lands Council's annual meeting, I went down south of the mine where we had. That was our fallback with our cows with that mess last year. And I drove a backhoe down there and I dug a great big hole and I put about 60 cows in one hole that had died on me on my watch after I got them to the feed ground. All told, we ended up losing about 32% of our cows to winter kill. And it was just a slow roll starting about just after Christmas. And we're gonna make it. No, we're not. Yes, we are, we're gonna make it. And finally, about the middle of January, came the realization that we weren't gonna make it. And by that time, I left dead cows clear across Goshute Valley. And and then you start fielding questions. Well, what the heck happened? Did you starve them to death? No, I didn't starve them to death. And so, but you take this on. I mean, you just swallow it. And and just like Dave said and Jared was said, you think you're the only guy out there that's that big of a jerk to kill your cows. And so that was, and so I just went on. You just go on, and that's what we do. We suck it up, and we grunt, and we just go on. And I remember going down here right out of headquarters. We cross Interstate 80. I remember looking off the edge of the interstate, thinking, "Man, that wouldn't be bad. I could just jump in front of a truck, and that'd be all right." And I thought, "Son of a gun, comes you won't even be able to do that right. You're going to land down there in a snowbank, and then all you'll do is get smooshed around, and then you freeze to death." And so, I mean, it's, so you start making these, and what else do? You make sick jokes about it. And, but my sister-in-law, my Heather and Desi were gone. They were in Arizona barrel racing. So I was here by myself. Andy, we've got a really great couple that help us out. Andy had gotten sick in the fall and gone too. And my sister-in-law happened to come by, stop in, and she opened the door and looked at me and said, "You're not okay." And I said, "What do you mean, Nicole?" I said, "I'm fine. Everything's good." And she says, "No, you're not. You're not okay." And that was the first realization that something bad was going on, and we got to figure out how to deal with it. And so I ended up. I called my neighbor up here to the north and said, "Hey, I'm killing cows. What about you?" And he said, "Oh, Dwayne, I'm so glad that you called me." He said, "I thought I was the only asshole in the country." And then I talked to my neighbor over to the south and to the west, and I said, "Hey, I've been, how are you doing? I'm killing cows." And he says, "I lost every effing thing that I ever, I, it took me 50 years to build this and I lost it all." And that was the realization that, we weren't alone. You're not in this by yourself. And so anyway, yeah, that's probably a good place for me to just kind of pump the brakes a little bit. And we've got other things to talk about, but that's this last winter really opened my eyes to the struggle that people have, and especially when we internalize it.
Yeah, and I know that for a lot of people listening, maybe in their context, they don't get what big, wide open range ground in Nevada looks like. But I've been in those tough winter situations, and yeah, it can happen, and it seems like it happens fast, yet it drags on forever. And so we had a couple of
Well,
those gentlemen.
exactly, Jared. I think that's, and that's, in its context, but at the same time, it happens on, it can happen on little outfits too. I mean, this deal, we were hung out. It was 25 miles. It was a 25 mile death march to get those cows up onto it. That when we got them there's 3.5 feet of snow on it. And, but the same kinds of things you look at the things that happen with folks that have, one of the things that we talked about is that there's been a huge decline in commodity prices are good, but net farm income, this slow roll of going broke slowly is brutal. My gosh, it's terrible. And so so I don't want to try to say that this is just a big outfit or big country problem. I can see now, that's the thing that opened my eyes, that this is all of us. This is, and we need to figure out how to help one another out.
Yeah, I like that. Help one another. Dave, you get on a lot of operations and I know you do the financial and ecological consulting, but I don't know if you find it in your consulting practices, I do, that oftentimes we set the business aside and we'll say, we're going to work on you. I don't know if you can relate to that. I guess just to kind of maybe say how widespread is mental health issues, addictions, things like that from your perspective.
Yeah, I'd like to give you an answer. I'd like to tell you it's 48%, but the problem is we're not talking about it. So it's really hard to tell. Everything Dwayne was saying, those are terrible situations, but I'm guessing that you have those same feelings even when it's not a terrible situation. This depression, mental health, addiction, it'll find its way to work his way into your life without a big winter kill, without a divorce or things like that. And I guess I'm just going to turn your question into we've got to be able to talk about it with each other, and I'll open up chapter two on my
Yes, please.
vulnerability and talk about really the first person that called me out on it. My wife did a pretty good job. But I'd always been a pretty heavy drinker, and a couple years ago, I went pro. Like I was, I'd reached a new level, and I was definitely an alcoholic. And I tried to kind of white knuckle and go at it on my own, and I made it for 15 days. And it was actually Jared I was talking to on day 15, and I was at that point, 15 days without alcohol was taking a toll on my. I was not feeling good, and Jared let me ramble on like somebody with the DTs does, and then just texted me later and said, and I'm talking about Jared Collister. He texted me and said, "Hey, you don't sound okay, and I'm worried about you." It was one sentence, and that text, which I probably didn't text back, and I probably called him a lot of names, like "Mind your own business, Jared." But if he hadn't texted that. I don't know where I'd be at right now. It started a slow progression towards sobriety, and now I'm nearly 2 years sober, and I can tell you one thing: if you're struggling with mental health and you are trying to cover it up or deal with it with alcohol was my deal, and I'm sure drugs are the same. It makes it so much worse. It just gives you the shovel to keep digging deeper and deeper. And my life is infinitely better being sober, and I hope that I stay this way. You never know, but what a difference that's made in my mental health is becoming a sober person and following those same 12 steps Jared's talking about.
Thank you, Dave.
I got, if
Jared.
I could jump in on that, the problem with like alcohol and numbing the pain is it does work for a little while. That's
Yeah.
what like all these things we're battling and having a hard time with, not facing them and dealing with them, like it will make it go away for the time being, but then you're screwed because then that's the only way you know how to deal with those problems, and so it just becomes a snowball effect. It really does. And I wanted to say too, and Dave's talking about that text. For me, when I was decided I was going to quit drinking, it had been almost 2 weeks, and I was headed home one day, and I just knew I wasn't going to make it home without drinking. And I stopped by and talked to Dave, and told he asked me how's your he knew I tried to quit drinking, and he I said, I'm having a hard time. And he's the one that introduced me into the AA program. So, like, it's interesting how I totally believe it's God helping us out through each other, talking to each other. But it, like, he talks about the realization, because that text, I texted him, and it's the same way right back at him, just helping each other out really is the only way I've been able to get healthy.
That's good, Jared. I can imagine that after having gone through experiences like these, that you can now recognize the symptoms in others, just as Dwayne's sister-in-law did, just as my mentors did for me. And so have any of you reached the point where you can say, I'm grateful that I went through that because now I can help others?
For sure.
I remember the day that I felt grateful for it.
Yeah. Talk about that day, Dave.
It wasn't day one. I assure you that. Anyway, I woke up and, or I don't know, maybe I was going to bed. I was in bed somehow. And I felt this overwhelming gratefulness that I had done all those things and gone through all that garbage, because I would not be in the mental health place that I am now if I hadn't. I had just barely been under the surface of it breaking into a problem for the rest of my life. I let it break so that it could build into something better. I didn't let anything happen. It broke and it turned into something better.
Interesting. How about you, Jared Koster?
Well, I think for sure one of the things that helped me, and we were talking earlier about, like, I just swore I was the only one that felt this way and didn't know what to do about it, so I hid it. Mm-hmm. But going and, like, being around people that have the same addiction issues, I automatically have, like, a different trust with them, because it's something, unless you've experienced it, you don't really know. Like, you know, a lot of people just say, pray harder. You're just not working hard enough at it, but it really, like, it just doesn't work that way. And being able to, like, relate with people, even now, you get talking to people and it, you can start reading, like, it always pops up. You can tell that they're struggling with something, and you can mention, like, hey, yeah, I've been sober for this long, and then you can have a discussion and they automatically, not necessarily just sober, like, mental health issues, like, yeah, I've really struggled with being suicidal. And it's because when you're in that position, you don't see a way out. You really don't believe there's a way out. You believe it'd be better if you weren't there. Like, you honestly believe it. And how do you explain that to someone that's never actually felt it? And so if you can talk to somebody, I've been really grateful for it, just being able to relate to people. You can tell, like, they love it, really. It's like, finally, I've felt the same way. It's just like, okay, I can talk to this guy because he's felt it and he knows what's going on. Where you don't really get that from somebody that maybe won't talk about it or hasn't ever really dealt with that before, because honestly, they don't know what you're going through. They really have no idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that. Through my journey, I can now spot it and recognize it in others, and I've been able to intervene in some cases and at least offer some empathy and understanding. Dwayne, how about for you? And I guess maybe address, how does this affect our business and our families, those key relationships, when we're dealing with mental health issues and addictions?
I really think that the family is takes the deepest hit, because whether we're self-medicating, whether we're whatever that looks like individually, we're not available. How do you say you're grateful for hard times? That's a tough one. But it's what makes us, you know, that's what makes us into what we are. You know, those scars and all that BS that builds up around us, that's what creates us into what we are. And so, you know, and I think that we have I don't, well, I think that, well, we do. We're all put here for a purpose, and you know, that purpose is largely around our fellow humankind, that we're expected to use our experiences in a way that will positively affect the lives of others. And honestly, that's the only way, that's how I've kind of dug out of my funk, if that makes any sense. Because honestly, you get to where, you know, you just don't care. I mean, there's a point where, you know, there was a day, you know, and we have these moments that slap us around. I think the good Lord, when you're as stubborn and as ignorant as I am, the good Lord has to really smack me on top of the head to get me to spin my head around. But Andy and I had a yearling down on the feed ground. Andy was ran over and was going to tail him up. He couldn't get up. And, you know, and at that point in my experience, I was just the hell with him, just kill them all. And I walked over with a 30-30 and shot him in the head while Andy had a hold of his tail. And at that point, you know, and we all go to different places, but that's where I went. That's where I was. And that's what scared me. You know, we remember the old videos about scared straight. That's what scared me is that I was at the point where I couldn't care less. I mean, I didn't care. And then it's a sadness. Then you just get sad. You think, what the hell? What is this? This is what your life is. And so I guess I'm circling here. But yeah, you know, but without those times, there's no way that we can. That's what makes us. That's where I'm going with it is I think that you know, and that's one of the things that I'm trying to, you know, because I think that even generationally, I think that I'm still trying to learn the lessons that my dad was trying to learn is that you know, we have to figure out a positive way to deal with this bad stuff. And so anyway, that's yeah. So, but I guess more than anything, this is why to me, and this is just selfish, my thing here today is more of an outreach for you know, I so appreciate my friends. And that's what this is about, is it makes me so appreciate the friendships that I've got with Dave, with you, Jared, with you know, folks that are out there that we lean on. And that's the thing is I think, you know, I think that would be the thing that if I were to take it, want to push something out is, you know, just like in kindergarten, everybody's supposed to hold somebody's hand when they cross the street, you know, you need to find a buddy. We need to find a buddy, and just like Jared did for Dave, you know, that's what this is about. And I would hope that that's where we go with this is I don't know how to any other way, but let's find a buddy and find somebody that you can trust and find, you know, and just like, and I think that Jared, isn't that part of the 12-step program is you have somebody that you can call.
Yeah, I'll build right off of that and bring Dwayne into the fold. I had a real bad day. I parted ways with my job and I identified with that job and I really liked it and I loved it. My first day of unemployment, Dwayne called. A lot of people called and really just wanted to scoop. But Dwayne called and said, I bet you feel like crap today. And I said, yeah, it's a pretty rough day. And he said, do not let that get you down. I remember this, you were one of the most conscientious ranch managers I know, and they can't take that away from you. And you don't think about it, but there takes some vulnerability to say those kind of things. For, you know, I don't know what it was like for you to say that, Dwayne, but it meant the world to me. And here a year later, I think about that call pretty regularly. And it just that one small act of kindness of showing some emotion and showing some support, being vulnerable to somebody else was huge to me.
That's good.
You know, we need to pass it forward, and I didn't do anything for Dave that Dave wouldn't have done for me. And that's the thing is this is a small community. My gosh, I really appreciate that, Dave. That means a lot.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, it encouraged me to send the same message to other people that I probably wouldn't have before. Dwayne was vulnerable enough to say that to me. And then I in turn did it to four or five people. And, you know, some of them didn't respond at all, and that's okay. But they know I was thinking about them, and maybe that's enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't know what our words, what our messages, what impact they'll have. And I think just acting on that intuition, inspiration that we have is important. So question for each of you. Regardless of what you're going through, whether it's just maybe you've been sober your whole life and you're not depressed, but we all have tough times. But specifically, I guess we'll narrow this down. So specifically, if you're dealing with addiction or mental health issues, how can your families best show you support? So this is projecting onto our spouses, our children. Maybe they recognize, okay, dad's not okay. What can I do to help him? And we'll just go Jared, Dwayne, and then Dave in that order.
Okay. Well, I think I haven't necessarily been in that situation. I've been on the other end of it. And my wife's become quite an expert in this field dealing with me. But I think what was really hard for her, and she's that is like you almost there's a little bit of waiting because at the end of the day, until that person is ready to change or wants to change, almost any like advice you give, they can take offense to it or be on the defense. So it's a very tender situation. I think support as best you can, and knowing that, like, just sending love to them, I think is probably one of the most important things. Like the person, whether it's mental health or addiction, they have to know that they can count on you no matter what. They have, like, they've got to have a trust that if you started, like, maybe a good opening line would be like, oh, so-and-so, I've heard they've, like, depression, I was reading about it, maybe I've kind of struggled with this a little bit. Just little things that what you can do to get that person to open up about their problem, to get them, one of the healthiest things is to talk about it. And so I think you have to be careful though, because if you come right out, they're going to, no, I don't got a problem. I mean, I've done it. I like, nope, this, I'm fine. I think like patience and the most loving support you can give, so they feel comfortable. One, knowing that they could talk to you about anything, but that you're not going to judge them, and don't take anything like for your fam. Like if you have a family member or a friend, you can't be judgmental and tell them like, oh, well, the reason you feel that way is because you're doing this, or the reason like give, just being they'll take a be on the defense right away. So I would just say as loving and supporting and open as you can possibly be, just to help them feel like they can come to you with anything. And that's, in my experience, that's what helped me the most that my wife did.
Perfect. Thanks, Jared. Dwayne.
I think Jared's is onto it there. I think that, and Jared Sorensen, you know my wife well. She doesn't put up with much, and I think that from a, and that's one of the things that I've always appreciated, and I think that that's a strength. I know so there's love and support, but then there's also this point where they don't need to put up with, we don't need to put up with you either. And I think the consistency is something, and God bless those families, just 'cause that's a tough situation. And I think there's times to because there's times that we need people to back off and leave us alone, and there's times that we need people to come and give us a pat on the back. And learning, I think that we could, if we can help one another learn how to intuit those times. I think that the families, that's a tough one, because my poor wife and daughter have put up with me for years. And I think some of this, and this probably comes with from all of us too, is typically, and I think this may be something that we're dealing with ag, is this is stuff that happens to very driven people, driven, intense people, and so how do you support and somebody that's driven and intense as you three gentlemen are, somebody comes up and mealy-mouths you and pats you on the butt, just go away. But so at some point we need somebody to hold us to account. I think that too, hold us to account. So I've stopped with that one.
Thanks, Dwayne.
I think what Dwayne said is worth mentioning again. This happens to driven people, and it makes it that much harder. I'll tell you, my wife never once told me that I had a drinking problem, and I never once made her feel like she could tell me that. So, it's gotta be a really tough situation for the family. Like, if you're the one going through it, that sucks, but you're bringing it home to these people who love you, and nobody wants to be the guy that you have to walk on eggshells around, especially the people that you love. That's just a horrible feeling. And I realized that's what I was doing to my family, and I'm sure other people can relate. That's just no way to live. One of the things I was thinking about what family members could do is to find somebody that the person in question really respects. If my wife had gone to Dwayne or Jared or Jared and said, "Hey, I'm really worried about Dave. He really respects you. Would you have a heart to heart with him? And would you risk losing your friendship to try and save him, to try and make his life better and my life better? Do you love him enough to do that?" And I bet all three of you would. And it wouldn't have been fun. And I probably would not have taken it very well, but I would have listened to one of you three. And I think there's something really important to that, because the person you live with who you don't want to have to walk on eggshells, if that's a concern, they're probably not going to bring up these problems to you. But having that person's mentor, or that person's somebody they really respect, come bring that to them, I think would be huge.
I like that idea. That's great. When I kind of went through that situational depression, and it wasn't limited to just that one instance, but I remember that was probably the first time that I really stared it in the face. And for me, faith is a big part of my life, and I think that gives an added measure, an added bit of pressure to add to it. I was an ecclesiastical leader in our little community church. And so here I was supposed to be the strong one counseling others, and my life seemed like a mess. But I did find solace in looking to Christ. And I had a picture on my wall that I believe in God. I also believe that because I believe in God that there's an opposition, and I call him Satan and devil. And I think that he wants us to cut our lives short, to die with our music still inside us, to leave without fulfilling our missions. And I think he plays upon those emotions. He plays upon us. He kicks us when we're down, and he has no sympathy for us. And so I'll just call that out. That's my belief. And to combat that, what helped me was reciting scripture and thinking about that image of Christ. The scripture was, "Look unto me in every thought, doubt not, fear not." Look unto me, meaning Christ. And so that helped me. I don't know if for you guys, if faith was instrumental in the journey. If so, you can volunteer and maybe share what that looked like.
I'd like to hit on that a little bit because I've been religious most, not all my life, but I've been around church all my life. It's been a big part of my life. But I realized I wanted to get healthy and I realized I couldn't do it on my own. Like I had not enough strength to do it. And I've gotten closer to God. I've started praying more. When you, like in AA, they say it, the higher power, whatever you want it to be. My higher power is God. And when I really like ask God to help me, it's amazing. Like I've, in all the church I've been to in my life, I don't feel as close to God as I do now, needing him to help me overcome a problem. And that, I mean, without a doubt, is probably the sole reason of strength that I have to get healthy and stay sober for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll go. I was I would say I was a devout atheist and jealous of you people with faith. Like, well, if you believe in that, it's got to be easy. You could just run to God, and he'll take care of it for you. But if I don't believe in that, what am I supposed to do? And I don't like I didn't find Jesus. I didn't become religious, but I did find that there's something bigger than me. There's something more important than me. And acting in this selfish way I had been with drinking that was not it. I needed to find something else. And it was a higher power, like we do talk about in the rooms. But it does it, for anybody who's not religious, don't feel like it has to be that way, you know. And I don't want to take away from your guys's faith, but if that's not in the cards for you, there's other ways. Don't get bogged down in atheism or different religions. There's different things to put your faith into.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate that perspective.
And I think I appreciate that, Dave, because that kind of my life has been, we were my folks, like I said before, my folks were devout. I mean, good folks, and I don't know that I ever really fell away from the religion of my youth, but I think you're not very active in it. And you fall back to those foundations. That's what it is. It's foundation. And the belief, our nation was, you go back and read the things that the founders wrote. They talked about, that this is there's more out there than us. And I think we're connected spiritually. I think we're connected with our animals spiritually, and that's one of the things that makes it so hard, is that we do in agriculture feel a strong connection to those animals that we steward, that we, when we take them on, we take on that sacred obligation from whoever you believe it's from, to take care of those critters and make their life as good as you can make it. And that's why the stuff gets hard. But faith is a part of it, and I think that all of us innately, whether we are believers or not, we still have that intuition, call it what you may, that still small voice, that intuition that tells you, you can look at somebody and say something, and something will tell you. We've all walked down the street and had something say stop, and whatever that is, and when we listen to that, whether you believe it's the universe, whether it's God, whether it's whatever it is, when we build on that, it makes us better. Does that resonate? Am I off? And we don't have to be religious. I'm not a religious guy. Well, but I'm a very spiritual guy.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where we go.
That was
That's
awesome.
yeah, thank you. Maybe we could talk a little bit about resources for those who are struggling, whether that be a book, a program, things that either have helped you personally, things that you know about that you would recommend. We're not diagnosing or anything here, but what we don't want to do is leave people like without something that they can act on, something that they can do. So we'll just kind of open that up and we can bounce it around of what is out there. For me, probably the one that has been most beneficial is some type of counseling therapy. In my adult life, it seems like we've had consistently individuals who've come into our life that have mentored us in specific areas. And even today, my marketing coach, agency person, when we got on the phone to talk about the summit that we're doing next week, we set that aside and we said, Jared, you're in a transition here and let's talk about some other things. And so she was able to recognize that need in me, and she was able to be a true friend for me at that time. So being able to talk through it was really helpful for me. But what have you guys got?
So I agree. Talking with somebody is huge. And I remember going to somebody, in Elko, it's a small town. And I thought, oh my God, what if people see my truck outside of this place? And I parked like a block away in front of some other business, so nobody would know that first of all, it's just stupid. Get over that. And if you can't get over that, there's so many new avenues that didn't used to exist. I'm not, they're not sponsoring anything, but betterhelp.com, where you can do a Skype or a Zoom call with a therapist. That's huge. I would go see my MD. And I mean, that's where I started. And I said, I'm definitely dealing with depression. They have a protocol for that. They ask you certain questions, and that's their job, is to help you with that. I would probably start there, talking to your MD and seeing where you go from there.
Perfect. Thanks, Jared.
Kind of same thing Dave was saying. If you have a friend to talk to, that would be good, but most likely the best thing to do would be some type of professional help. And the avenues that are, like Dave was saying, you can Google it, you can find a Facebook group. If you didn't want anyone to know that you were going to go see a counselor, you can get on the internet and find one. If you don't want to go tell your doctor, there's so many avenues now, right on our phones. But any local church would have resources to help you. Really, anybody you talk to, somebody knows somebody that's had these problems and could help you out, most likely. But if you didn't want to tell anyone, we have the technology. You can look it up on the internet, and there's thousands of avenues to get help.
Yeah. Does AA have virtual options?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, good to know.
And so I assume the same for all of
There's
the other.
a, I was going to say the, I use it almost every day, but it's called the Everything AA app. I just downloaded it on my phone, and it has tons of anything you'd need to know about how to stay sober from alcohol. The Everything AA app's been great for me.
That's good. Let's, when we talk about addictions, oftentimes we think of, drugs, alcohol, nicotine, things like that. But can maybe any of you, would you be willing to volunteer to talk about maybe other addictions that are not necessarily harmful substance, addictive behaviors? I know that at different times I've been addicted to work, and I put that before my family and my self-worth is the work that I do. And so as I've learned about it, I've realized that's an addiction. Food can be an addiction. Does anybody want to jump into that realm of?
I think anything that that you start using to cope with stress can become it, that's what starts it to be addicting, is when you start doing something instead of facing and dealing with your stress or anxiety or depression, using anything else to deal with it that's not healthy, that just makes it go away for the time being. So it doesn't matter what, it can be anything. It's just a way to numb the pain and get your mind off it for a while. The problem is it doesn't fix anything. So it really, like, there's so many, I just happen to like substances and alcohol, but there's anything that can take you away from life.
Do you guys think about social media? Could that be an addiction? I mean, it's certainly for youth, but what about men our age?
I think for
Oh,
everybody.
yeah.
That was going to be my first go-to. Whenever something's going wrong, get the hell off the Facebook. Because it just sets us up to compare ourselves, compare what we're doing, and nobody puts their screw ups on there. I do, because every day is a screw up, but that's just kind of what it is. But yeah, this whole, and I think it goes back to part of what it is, and I think we need to help people understand that part of this addictive personality is comes from being driven, comes from being that person. I mean, because there's such a fine line between being completely nuts and being a genius. This being driven is what it pushes us to those behaviors. Whether it's pornography, whether it's video, whether it's alcohol, drugs, work, all this stuff, because these are avenues to take our mind off of being driven. This is a release from, and so I think one of the things that I've really worked hard at doing to help myself find that release is I was counseled years ago by somebody, you need to always have a good book to read, and not a trashy, not, but a good, you to so that when you have to release yourself, because being, and I don't know, I'm probably doing a terrible job of explaining this, but to me, I've got to have an out, or else I will just make myself crazy. Trying to solve all the problems that I can't do anything about now. So I've found releases in my life. One of them is reading. I'll sit down with a book and read until I fall asleep. The other one, and just today, I was a little anxious, and I throw it out there. I was a little nervous, and so when I came in, and several years ago, I started, whenever I was needed that release, I'd go cut a truckload of cedar posts. And so I've got a, guys, I've got a truckload of cedar posts on the back of the pickup. because that's my release. I've got to have a release. And so how do we find, does that make sense to you guys? Maybe I know.
Yeah.
Totally.
I have a really hard time not being productive, and it drives my wife nuts. I've got to be doing something. And that was one thing drinking did for me was, okay, we can sit in the house and watch movies or whatever, because what I'm doing right now is drinking. I can check that off the list. And it didn't stop me from drinking and doing other things. But that drivenness was, mm-hmm. it got to be the only way I could relax, is if, you know, everybody thinks what I'm doing is relaxing, but what I'm doing is drinking, and I can check that off my list.
Interesting.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. That's good. At Ag Steward, we try to take a really broad look and look at our businesses holistically. I mean, we talk about profitability and land regeneration and creating legacy businesses, but at the root of it, we really care about people, and we want to help the steward to improve himself so he can then act upon his stewardships with greater power and clarity and purpose. And so within these conversations, there have been individuals, and I'll just name a couple of them that could be potential resources. Greg Bear is one of them. He's been on our podcast, and his book is called Real Love. Another one is Tyler Watson, who has a specific technique that he uses, which I believe is inspired, that helps us to be able to overcome addictions, even deep-seated physiological type addictions. And so look those guys up. We can't necessarily connect you with them, but if that's, those are resources that I would throw out there, Greg Bear and Tyler Watson. And we've been rolling here for about an hour and a half, and we don't want to stop a good thing. We can always come back to it though for round two, but as we're maybe getting close to wrapping up, I just want to be sure that you guys have expressed what you feel you need to express. If there's anything else, and maybe we'll just go one more round with everybody, Jared, Dave, and then Dwayne, and then we can kind of tie this thing together.
I guess I felt like it's been a pretty good discussion. I would say if there's anyone listening that this topic's intriguing because you know you have a problem with it, just take a step and reach out. It's totally worth it. I know what it's like when you're in a situation and you cannot see a way out, and so you don't try. You think there's no, you just really believe there's no way out, but I'm telling you there is. You just have to take a step and go get some help, get a friend, talk to a friend. I'm on Facebook, look me up. That's all I got.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I would say the biggest takeaway is find somebody that you can be honest with. And when you're dealing with these things, it's hard to be honest with yourself. So finding somebody that you can be 100% honest with and who will help you become more honest is, I don't know another way to do it without that. Without having somebody to talk to and be completely honest with. And same as Jared, if you need me to be that person, you can be honest with me.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I agree with these two guys. I'm honored to I appreciate them letting me join, or letting all of you guys, very, very humbled. But I, you know, find your buddy. If you need to make a buddy, reach out to somebody, reach out to any of us. You know, and be a buddy. That's the other thing, is be a buddy. I think a lot of times when the best things that I do whenever I'm feeling down and feeling really crappy is when I can go do something for somebody else. and get outside of myself, be a friend. And my wife tells me that I'd have friends if I ever answered the phone, but or returned a call. But we've got to be a friend. We've got to be a friend if we want if we want friends. That's not saying that I'll return anybody's call. So eventually, just give me time. So, but thank you, Jared. Appreciate you putting this on, and Dave, thank you. Dave and I were visiting with Jared at poetry about this, and Dave jumped in and mentioned that the IL Jared was might join us too, and I think this has been fantastic. I appreciate it. Because we need to be talking about this stuff. Everybody's dealing with it.
I have not heard a podcast like this from people like us. I hope it helps somebody.
I am confident that it will. It's helped me, and I appreciate that. I appreciate you guys being vulnerable, being willing to share your messages, put yourselves out there. Once we hit publish, we don't know how far and wide this will reach, but this is one of those that I'm going to ask you to share. When you hear this, if somebody comes to mind, don't hesitate, because it very well could be the thing that saves a life, that saves a marriage, that saves a business. We don't know, but act on that and act quickly on that. Getting back to that statistic, I don't think we have to look very far within our circle of friends, and oftentimes within our own family, to see somebody who has committed suicide and has left this earth early. And so let's just call it for what it is. It's, I mean, talk about an epidemic in the world, depression, suicide, addictions. That's what it is. That's what it is, and we're kind of going into uncharted territory here. Post-COVID, let's be leaders, especially within the agriculture industry. Let's build the resiliency that we need to endure whatever it is that comes, whether that be financial challenges, emotional challenges, early death in the family, whatever it might be. We can be that for each other. We appreciate you guys listening. We appreciate Dwayne Coombs, Dave Voth, and Jared Collister for being our guests here today. And we hope that that this has been a help and this has been beneficial to those that are listening. So thanks everybody for listening. We encourage you to tune in again, and again encourage you to share.
Thanks for joining us on the Profitable Steward Podcast. Want to learn more about making your enterprise more profitable? Check out AgSteward on our website, www.agsteward.fyi. Here at AgSteward, we're working hard to make sure you have the latest tools and knowledge from the field of regenerative agriculture. Subscribe to our podcast to keep up with the latest info and help us spread the word by giving this video a thumbs up, sharing this information with other farmers, and as always, please join the conversation by leaving us a rating and a review so we can help you to keep growing strong.